Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura, bringing you the social media news and comments on African stories.
Coming up, Mozambique's Renamo opposition party announces a ceasefire to all military operations against government forces for the next 7 days to allow the public to travel countrywide and enjoy New Year festivities.
We want peace and to be able to move freely. The escorts held us up a lot, and now we can travel without hindrance.
Nigeria welcomes the appointment of the country's Environment Minister Amina Mohammed as the new United Nations Deputy Secretary General. We hear from President Buhari's media advisor.
It's delightful news to Nigeria. Though the government is going to miss her, she's been doing a good work as Environment Minister Nigeria. So we're glad about it.
We will also read out some of the comments on the different topics that you've been posting on our Facebook page.
That's right, indeed. But before we get there, here's a chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Turkey and Russia have agreed to a ceasefire plan for all of Syria, Turkish state media announced on Wednesday. It remains uncertain when the ceasefire will come into force, with neither side confirming reports on an implementation. Major stumbling blocks seem not to have been cleared yet. Among them is Turkey's demand that Russia's ally, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, be excluded from future negotiations, DW correspondent in Istanbul, Dorian Jones, says.
Key to that will also be how Assad reacts to this. He's not going to be happy about giving up power, especially when he feels his forces are on the ascendancy. And Moscow will have to work very closely with Assad in any ceasefire agreement and ultimate resolution to this conflict. So yes, this is a major stumbling block between Moscow and Ankara. But still, both sides do realize they need one another for some ultimate solution to Syria, which both sides see in their interests.
Police in Berlin have detained a 40-year-old Tunisian man possibly linked to last week's deadly attack in the German capital. Prosecutors suspect the man of having been a contact for the alleged attacker, 24-year-old Tunisian Anis Amri, who steered a truck into a crowded Christmas market on December 9, teen killing 12 and injuring about 50. Amri was later shot dead by the Italian police near the city of Milan. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The number of migrants leaving Germany voluntarily hit a 16-year high in 2016. According to government figures, 55,000 people, mostly from the West Balkan countries, left Germany after being denied asylum, an increase of 20,000 compared to last year. In Berlin, Interior Ministry spokesman Harald Neimanns welcomed this development.
It is always preferable to have people leave out of their own free will. Deportation has to be a last resort to get asylum seekers to return to their countries.
Germany has tightened its asylum laws over the last year as it struggles to integrate a wave of refugees who have arrived in the nation fleeing wars in the Middle East and Africa. Dozens of Boko Haram fighters have given themselves up to authorities in southern Niger, the Interior Ministry said, days after the Islamist group suffered key losses over the border in Nigeria. The fighters arrived in the remote desert town of Diffa in groups and were being held by local authorities. The mostly young people are hoping for an amnesty from the government, a possibility that has been considered by the Niger authorities. The Nigerian government has removed the names of 50,000 ghost workers from its payroll, according to a presidential spokesman. President Muhammadu Buhari came to power last year with a pledge to fight corruption, which is endemic in the oil-rich country. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
Welcome once again to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
We begin the program in Mozambique, where the armed opposition Renamo Party will cease military operations against government forces for the next 7 days to allow the public to enjoy New Year festivities. The truce announced on Tuesday is raising hopes for an end to the long-lasting conflict in the former Portuguese colony. Rights groups estimate that dozens of people have been killed this year in tit-for-tat attacks between Renamo fighters and the ruling Frelimo government. Fred Muvunyi has the details.
The ceasefire was announced by President Filipe Nyusi after he talked on the phone to Afonso Dhlakama, leader of the Renamo.
After the call, I felt encouraged that what we've been saying all along will come true. Hostilities must cease. Nobody should die because of differing ideas and convictions.
Dhlakama himself went a step further, saying this could even restart new peace negotiations.
If everything goes well, I don't see why Dhlakama and Nyusi shouldn't talk again to prolong the truce.
Dhlakama, who makes a habit of talking of himself in the third person, promised there will be no attacks on vehicles in central and northern Mozambique, where clashes erupted again last year. The truce seemed to be holding on Wednesday. Passengers on overland buses like Augusto Matias were happy that they could travel without the usual military escorts.
We want peace and to be able to move freely. The escorts held us up a lot, and now we can travel without hindrance.
Observers warn that it is too early to get up hopes for a permanent truce. Promising negotiations have often broken down in the past. Renamo accuses Frelimo of excluding the opposition from power structures and the country's gas and coal reserves. Many had hoped that elections in 2014 would restore peace, but Renamo contested the result in six provinces where it said it had won a majority. On Monday, President Nyusi struck a cautious note concerning a lasting solution.
It's always good to talk, even if we can only agree on provisional or temporary solutions, since they're a sign of hope for the whole country.
According to conservative estimates, at least 1,000 people have died in crashes since October 2015. There are reports of human rights abuses against civilians, while tens of thousands of Mozambicans have fled to neighboring Malawi.
Fred Muvunyi with that report. Investigations into last week's attack on a Berlin Christmas market are still bringing in new information to light. Investigators in Germany, Poland, Italy, and Tunisia are working to put together the evidence of what happened on that day and whether the main suspect, Anis Amri, had any help in planning the attack. The attack left 12 people dead and many more injured. Sela Oneko compiled this report.
Investigators are still trying to recreate the events of the evening when a truck drove into a crowded Berlin Christmas market on December 19th. The main suspect, the 24-year-old Tunisian Anis Amri, is believed to have traveled from Berlin to the Netherlands. There, he boarded a bus to France and then to Italy, where he was shot dead by police in the city of Milan. Dutch police said that they have not yet confirmed whether Amri did actually travel through the Netherlands. Investigators are also still examining the bodies of Amri and the Polish truck driver, who Amri is believed to have killed. They have the hope that both the autopsy and information from recent arrests might help them determine Amri's ties to terrorist groups. In Berlin, police arrested a 40-year-old man on Wednesday, and in Tunisia, Amri's nephew and two other suspects were arrested. As Germany gears up for New Year's celebrations, several cities have heightened their security. In the city of Cologne, police president Jürgen Mattis said that they would do everything to provide security.
We will set up several vehicles, among them 10 trucks and a water cannon or two, as well as 34 concrete barriers to prevent cars or trucks from entering specially sensitive security areas, such as near bridges and the left bank of the Rhine.
Der Brücken und insbesondere des linken Rheinufers einfahren können.
On New Year's Eve last year, Cologne became the scene of widespread sexual assault, as hundreds of women reported that they were assaulted by groups of young men. The police said that they would install video surveillance to monitor the festivities for the first time this year.
Sila Onoko with that report. Nigeria has welcomed the appointment of its Environment Minister Amina Mohammed as the new UN Deputy Secretary General. Amina Mohammed was widely tipped to become the number two to the new incoming UN Chief Antonio Guterres after she led successful negotiations on the Sustainable Development Goals agreed by the United Nations to end extreme poverty by the year 2030. Before her appointment as Environment Minister a year ago, Mohammed was Ban's special advisor on post-2015 development goals. DW's Obale Musa spoke to Femi Adesina, the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari, regarding the appointment of Amina Mohammed.
Well, just as our president said in the statement that was issued, it's delightful news to Nigeria. Though the government is going to miss her, she's been doing a good work as environment minister. I'm sure the president himself must have found it difficult to let her go. So it's good development, it's good news, and it's honor for Nigeria. So we're glad about it.
Is Nigeria going to expect anything in return from Amina being at the helm of affairs over there?
No, she's a global public servant now, and we would just be very proud that we produced her. But she is not going to be just responsible to Nigeria, she's responsible to the entire world.
Is she likely going to serve as an image to the country somewhere?
Already her appointment is an image booster for Nigeria. So the fact that she's been appointed is an image booster for Nigeria.
Maybe an acceptance of the government and administration of President Buhari in the eyes of the world?
The acceptance is there already. You need to see how our president is taken when he goes on international stage. He's well regarded, he's well respected. So the acceptance is there. It can only further boost it.
Femi Adesina, the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari. And now we hear what's coming up on the social media desk.
Indeed, with only a few more days till the year ends, we decided we will also look at some stories on issues that directly affect you. And we start off in Kenya. The National Transport and Safety Authority in Kenya is in charge of safety on the road. And they also look for ways to reduce road accidents, especially this festive season.
And how are they doing that?
They're using a poster that has the words, "Kindly observe lane discipline, don't be like me." And the offender is supposed to stand by the highway holding up this sign until another offender is caught.
Sounds interesting. And what are people saying about this new, I should say, innovative way of getting, you know, the bad road users, you know?
Mkenya Milele says, kudos to NTSA. Punishment next time, let the drivers carry the vehicle. Of course, this is Chicken Tongue. Kenyan Boy says, NTSA for once doing their job right. When you violate rules, you hold the placard until the next violator replaces you. Mm-hmm. And Cyrus Kanyare says, NTSA, this is a good move because accidents are caused by those who think they are in a hurry.
True indeed.
And Isaac, you have been to some African countries. What has been your experience on the road?
That's true. I remember commuting through Uganda's capital, Kampala. And, I mean, motorists didn't have, you know, time to wait for others. I mean, they were ignoring the signposts, especially the border cyclists. You know how irritating they can be. You remember we did a story about Kaunyemu app. This is an app that was developed actually to alert other drivers about police officers doing their job to arrest those drinking under the influence of alcohol. So what do I want to say? They want to avoid being arrested by alerting each other that, hey, that junction, there's a police officer over there. Anyway.
Which, in my opinion and personal opinion, is not right.
It's not right at all.
And we also have a comment on the same. Grant Brooks says the NTSA signs are cool. We should try them for MPs who don't account for community development funds.
I wonder how they would do that.
I think it is very effective to shame people that actually do not respect other people's rights and dignities. You can also tell us unique ways of punishing traffic offenders in your country.
And remember, you know, during festivities or as the new year approaches, warning signs, the police is warning every, you know, nation of every country not to drink, first of all, under the influence of alcohol, maintain the right lane, and respect other road users, especially avoiding road rage.
Especially.
Now, yeah. For more comments, go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leave your comments on that story. It is still trending. And in case you've just joined us, you are listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Onjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, how the importation of fish in Kenya is threatening the livelihood of fishermen and the fish industry in general.
Ati samaki inatoka China. Inakuja hapa inauzwa.
Just imagine, the fish comes from China, even though we've got this lake right here. What's the use of it then? Why can't the government take care of the lake so that it can provide us with as much fish as China?
But before we hear more about the fishermen complaining on the importation of fish from China, the German city of Hamburg will host the next G20 summit in July 2017, bringing together dozens of world leaders and delegates from 20 major economies with an aim of holding high-level discussions that will lead to international financial stability. According to organizers here in Germany, next year's G20 summit will focus on Africa as a global partner in economic policies for sustainable growth and development on the continent. DW's Andreas Becker from the Business Desk spoke to Paul Collier, Germany's consultant on African affairs, and he starts by telling us more about the focus of the next G20 summit in Hamburg.
In my experience, African governments are sick of being preached to. So let's stop preaching and just focus on what we can do to help create economic opportunities and then provide a platform or a forum where African governments can make their own commitments, which then signal to investors that Africa is indeed open for business. So the German government will be hosting a major Africa conference in June. I think this will be opened by the Chancellor. And a prime focus of that will indeed be business, so that it will be a chance for African governments to, as it were, promote their own investment environments before a business audience. And that would be very valuable.
The German government has taken over the G20 presidency and has put Africa on the agenda. The focus is on how to stop illegal migration to Europe, and critics say it's basically the concept can be summed up as Europeans give money to African governments and they make sure that Africans stop coming to Europe. What do you think of these migration partnerships?
I mean, I've been working with African governments for 40 years, and not a second of that has been motivated by the thought, stop them coming to Europe. What I've been motivated by is the quite evident need for a continent with a billion people on it to catch up with the rest of mankind. For many years, Africa stagnated when other parts of the world were growing, and so Africa's got a lot of catching up to do. Europe is Africa's neighbouring continent, so it's natural that that Europe should help in that catch-up process. If Africa doesn't catch up, then of course Africans will decide that the only where does hope lie? Hope lies elsewhere.
The German development minister Gerd Müller keeps saying we need a Marshall Plan for Africa and we must move away from these small-scale development projects. What do you think of that?
I think we certainly need scale. Everything has to work at scale. Dr. Mayaki, the head of NEPAD, which is the Pan-African Economic Organization, he's a former Prime Minister of Niger. So Dr. Mayaki said, we've got many rabbits and we need an elephant. And that's, I think, a good way of visualizing the many, many little initiatives that just enable whoever creates the initiative to brag for 10 minutes in front of a TV camera. But these little initiatives, none of them have scaled up. And so the last thing we want is another array of little initiatives. We want things that unify existing approaches so that we actually create a standardized approach which can go to scale.
That was Paul Collier, Germany's consultant on African affairs, speaking to DW's Andreas Becker from the Business Desk.
On the spot.
Now, a vocational training center in Senegal has been teaching electromechanics to the youth since 1998. Founded by a German master craftsman, young men and women attend workshops on a weekly or monthly basis. Their certification from the center makes them sought-after employees and in return gives them a financially viable future. Emmanuel Lande reports.
Dan Siller is winding copper that will be used to repair a broken motor. The 27-year-old is attending a one-month training course at the Aspai Centre, a vocational training centre in Thiès, a town about an hour's drive from the capital, Dakar.
I come from a family of salesmen. My dad wanted me, no matter what, to learn a trade. At the moment in Senegal, having a trade can really push you to go further. Right now, young people don't want to work with their hands, but I really believe in it. It's going to be a huge success.
For the next 4 weeks, he's going to perfect his skills and learn new techniques. But he's not new to the centre. In 2012, he followed a mechanical training course for 8 months, which led him to get a job in a repair workshop.
After the course with the certificate, I can drop off my CV to get a job in a factory. But if you know a trade well enough, you can open up your own workshop.
The centre trains these young apprentices in a trade so that they can make a living in Senegal and to help them carve a future for themselves in their home country. Softly spoken and the only female employee at the centre, Yassine Dion is today its vice president. She says she passed through the centre herself and did the electromechanic course. She doesn't understand why young people would risk their lives to find work in Europe.
I don't recommend that anyone takes a boat or does anything to go abroad. With a good training course, you can make a living here.
For 30,000 CFA francs, or around 45 euros, training courses are given in information technology, photovoltaic systems, electricity and electromechanics.
Here in Senegal, it's very difficult. There are young people who have their degrees, who study, but they cannot find work, and it's really a shame. There's a lot of unemployment in Senegal. When you do this training course, you can learn a trade in less than 3 months, and you'll be able to work. You don't leave here empty-handed.
Entrepreneurship in Senegal is seen as the biggest solution to unemployment by the disadvantaged youth and those not so young as well. Back at the centre, given the chance to leave Senegal or stay and have a stable job, Dam Silla chooses staying in Senegal every time.
My father wanted me to learn a trade. He insisted because sooner or later having certain skills means you can live better here in Senegal. That's why I decided to follow the course.
For the time being, the centre operates with no government support, but has already trained hundreds of young people in the hopes of giving them a better future.
Emmanuel Lande with that report.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, Lake Victoria is the world's second biggest freshwater lake. Its waters are shared among three countries, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. On the Kenyan side of the lake, fishermen in traditional sailing boats and canoes used to catch a wide variety of fish there. But the tilapia imports from China is threatening the livelihoods of traditional fishermen. This report by Linda Stout is now presented by Natalie Muller.
Waves are gently lapping up onto the shores of Kenya's Lake Victoria. Fishing boats cruise to and fro. Most of them are traditional sailing boats and canoes with paddles. A few have modern outboard motors. Joseph Ndati has spent almost his entire life on boats like these. He's now 78, but he can vividly recall the golden days of the fishing industry on the world's second largest freshwater lake.
In the olden days, you could just cook up some corn and then put the pot into the water. The fish would swim into the pot and you could take them right home and cook them. Or you could take a rod and put a bit of corn on the hook. Soon after, you would catch fish. Big fish.
In the 80s and 90s, the fishermen had plenty of edible fish, huge tilapia in their nets. But the boom days are over. Now the ecosystem is under threat. The tilapia that was introduced by the British in colonial times has wiped out many native species. John Otieno complains that environmental pollution is adding to the problem and ruining their business.
Factories and industrial companies dump everything in the lake. It's badly polluted, and we know which companies discharge their wastewater into the lake.
But the fishermen themselves are also part of the problem. A lot of them were attracted by huge catches during peak times, and overfishing has decimated the sought-after tilapia. Recently, fish processors started buying tilapia from China so they wouldn't miss out on the lucrative export business. But this unleashed a storm of protest.
Our concern is that the government permitting fish import from China must therefore be seen as nothing less than a scheme to completely kill the fishing industry in Kenya in total disregard of the livelihoods being put at risk and possibilities of serious job losses for our fisher folk.
That's Nicholas Ngumbo. He's a member of parliament for the lake region around Kisumu. His colleague, Shakir Sabir, has threatened to take action.
We want to give notice to all these fish processors that if we find you bringing those fish here, we're not only going to boycott you, we are going to make sure that you do not operate from Kisumu.
The members of parliament are suggesting that the fish industry should get the same protection measures and subsidies as, for example, sugar producers. This is a clever move in the run-up to next year's election, as it makes sure the fishermen are on their side.
A report by Linda Staude. Now, Wanjiku, what else do we have from the social media front?
Well, we go to Ghana, where Ghanaians on Twitter reacted after a tweet by the British High Commissioner to Ghana, John Benjamin's comment in which he seems to be taking a dig at the president, John Mahama.
But it's just an outgoing president. Anyway, what did he say?
In his tweet, which has since been deleted, he said, "Oh, that nasty air outside all of a sudden. Did someone inaugurate the Hamilton already?"
And why did it spark so many reactions, if I may ask?
Well, you see, President Mahama is said to have inaugurated many projects just before the general elections that happened earlier this month.
Any reasons for that? Reactions from people, why they think, you know, it was not the right thing to do, or the right thing to do, rather?
Well, the reactions are mixed. And Kwame Louise asks, "Am I the only one who doesn't see anything wrong with John Benjamin's Hamilton tweet? We always try to make a case out of nothing." And Nana Aserdo says, "All of you should leave John Benjamin alone. Go vent your anger at a bucket of water." Felix Roman says, "But I don't blame John Benjamin. We insult and poke fun at our leaders. You don't insult your spouse in public and expect people to respect them."
That's an interesting opinion from Felix Rombach. Anyway, remember, these are your comments that we read from our Facebook page, and don't necessarily represent DW's views.
Indeed. Many Africans on social media, especially on Twitter, will often come out in arms to protest things that they feel are unfair.
True that. And okay, what else do we have?
We have Stephen Ansong, who says, "John Benjamin, there's nothing wrong with his post. At least he's trying to describe the weather. He's a true diplomat, and that there's no doubt." Onebe says, "John Benjamin has made John Mahama know that we respect and support him as our president, even though we didn't vote for him for the second time."
Oh, they can still send in those tweets and comments. Well, that's all we have time for today.
But you can still comment on various stories on our Facebook page.
Yes, and remember to let us know what is happening in your region. But before we let you go, just a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you in this edition. Mozambique's Renamo Opposition Party announces a ceasefire to all military operations against government forces for the next 7 days to allow the public to travel countrywide and enjoy New Year festivities. Nigeria welcomed the appointment of the country's Environment Minister Amina Mohammed as the new United Nations Deputy Secretary General. And we've also heard about a project helping the youth in Senegal to learn electromechanics. There we come to the end of the program. For more news, visit our webpage dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page with your comments on the stories posted. From me, Wanjiku Maura.
And of course, me, Isaac Mugabe, your host. It's goodbye and take care.